What if the most precious thing we're losing isn't something we can hold, but rather its opposite, the spaces between? Right now, a generation walks the earth who remembers both worlds, rotary phones and smartphones, encyclopedias and Wikipedia, waiting and now. We're caught between before and after, digital immigrants making a one-way journey into a landscape where silence, boredom, and solitude are becoming extinct. Unlike the slow centuries it took for Gutenberg's printing press to reshape civilization, our transformation happens at breakneck speed, a single human lifetime witnessing the complete rewiring of how we think, remember, and exist. The question isn't whether technology changes us, it's whether we'll notice what vanishes in the transition. Spend just 1 week browsing the web, and your brain physically changes. UCLA researcher Gary Small proved this with internet-naive subjects whose neural activity measurably shifted after 7 days online. While brain plasticity sounds promising, it means something unsettling for children. Brains bathed in screens from birth become exquisitely tuned for digital reality, but poorly equipped for the quiet material world. Nicholas Carr argues the internet trains us for shallow rather than deep thinking. We skim paragraphs, hop between tabs, absorb more information, but retain less meaning. The Pew Internet Project found experts describing digital natives as quick decision makers who treat the internet as their external brain, efficient but perpetually thirsty for instant gratification. Remember childhood boredom, those endless summer afternoons with nothing to do? That spaciousness birthed creativity. Anthony Trollope credited his greatest novels to a friendless youth spent daydreaming, learning to live in a world altogether outside the world of my own material life. Today's teenagers never stare into space. Their idle moments overflow with feeds and notifications. What happens when blank spaces disappear? Where will tomorrow's creators establish what Montaigne called a back shop, all our own, that essential sanctuary for solitude? Amanda Todd was 15 when she died, the third most Googled person of 2012. A stranger blackmailed her for years after capturing an image from webcam. The photos spread across Facebook. She changed schools 3 times, endured physical attacks, and drank bleach in a suicide attempt, which only invited more mockery. Finally, she posted a video telling her story using handwritten flashcards, accumulating 17 million views in 2 weeks. Most striking, Amanda turned to the very technology that tormented her, choosing digital confession over diaries, friends, or counselors. Her mother, Carol, responded similarly, maintaining blogs, producing Amanda-branded wristbands, giving speeches. When YouTube removed Amanda's video, Carol requested its restoration because it was something that needed to be watched by many. Online confessions collapse private and public, like diaries that simultaneously fear and hope for discovery. But when we confess online rather than in solitude, we abandon the powerful workshop of the lone mind. Our ideas about ourselves wilt when exposed to scrutiny too early. We've adopted a culture where experiences aren't real until shared, devaluing private reflection in favor of public performance. For years, Wikipedia claimed Erica Feldman invented the hair iron in 1872, a complete fabrication that spread across the internet and into printed books. This reveals democracy's flaw when applied to knowledge. When everyone's version of facts carries equal weight, specialist voices get drowned out while persistent interest groups gain power. James Heilman, an emergency room doctor volunteering 40 hours weekly as a Wikipedia administrator, fought unsubstantiated health claims on the Transcendental Meditation page. A small team of TM editors won every vote through patient persistence. With endless patience, a group can substantially alter what knowledge is presented to the world, Heilman warns. Add another concern. 91% of Wikipedia editors are men. We grip phones holding information resources governments would have killed for a generation ago, making us feel our opinions deserve broadcasting. Crowdsourced ratings and algorithmic recommendations now guide our choices. Yelp reviews swing restaurant patronage even when food quality stays unchanged. What we've lost is the pause that leads to wisdom. Rilke advised, "Live the questions now. Perhaps you will then, gradually, without noticing it, live along some distant day into the answer. But we want answers now, delivered by algorithm or mob vote." Millions inhabit fantasy selves in Second Life while real bodies atrophy. Others watch Twitch streams, donating to favorite gamers. Robotic seals comfort Japanese nursing home residents. Instagram filters existence through sepia nostalgia. Our abstracted cyborg lives feel safer than raw reality, which might explain why we haven't found alien civilizations. Perhaps they're too absorbed in digital pleasures, self-stimulating like laboratory rats pressing bars for dopamine. Our digital devotion becomes painfully clear when technology fails. When Wi-Fi dies, we choke as though oxygen vanished. In 1859, the Carrington event, a massive solar flare, cast auroras visible in Cuba and ignited telegraph stations. Scientists estimate a 12% chance of experiencing such a storm in the next decade, which would devastate power grids, satellites, and communications, costing trillions. Like noticing a refrigerator's hum only when it stops, we've grown so accustomed to technology that its sudden absence would shock violently. True contemplation demands retreat, going into the world, then finding isolation to digest experiences. Gradually, periods without distraction lengthen. We stop hearing phantom buzzes, stop feeling the pull elsewhere. We rediscover absorption. Ancient Roman Calvisius Sabinus purchased educated slaves to memorize poets, calling out verses on demand to appear learned. His contemporaries mocked this outsourcing, recognizing that accessing information differs fundamentally from possessing it, a criticism that resonates as we increasingly remember where information lives rather than the information itself. Humans have always created memory aids like dog-eared pages and marginalia. Digital tools have transformed these supplementary tactics into our primary strategy. Our brains now fill with pointers to pointers to pointers, creating minds of signposts rather than substance, contrasting sharply with ancient memory palaces where knowledge was internalized through vivid spatial associations. Modern apps like TimeHop promise total recall by algorithmically resurfacing our digital past, but human memory's selective nature serves crucial psychological functions. Our identity emerges partly from what we choose to remember and forget. Memory isn't linear accounting, but sophisticated curation deriving meaning from both presence and absence. Like masterful music, memory's power lies as much in what's left out as what's included. I embarked on Analog August, 30 days without internet, mobile phone, or social media. The first days were excruciating, fighting constant impulses to check email. As days passed, new rhythms emerged. I awaited mail with embarrassing anticipation and noticed my diminishing tolerance for interruptions. Without my phone, I stared awkwardly when friends paused conversations to check texts. By month's end, previously normal behavior now looked compulsive. Returning online, I devoured 264 emails with military efficiency, ignoring my partner completely, proving the most important lesson: being connected isn't the problem. Choosing which connections matter in each moment is the real challenge. As the last generation remembering life before the internet, we're translators of before and after. We remember landlines, letter writing, the pleasure of being unreachable. The end of absence appears deceptively as merely gains, more connectivity, instant access, endless entertainment. Yet China's Lunar New Year, when hundreds of millions undertake arduous journeys home despite sophisticated digital connectivity, demonstrates our fundamental drive for authentic physical connection. The end of absence isn't inevitable. It's a choice we make with every glance at screens. Try going without screens when bored. Mealtimes, morning routines, the hour before bed. Our greatest achievements emerge from solitude, from that state between waking and sleeping where imagination flourishes. This requires maintaining conscious spaces for absence, reclaiming the sanctuary of solitude before it vanishes completely.